We're going to Blue Jays talk it up. Phone lines are open at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. We are going to go out to Oxford, Maine to start things up. Listening on sportsnet590.ca. Brandon, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. How are you?
Good, thanks. Go ahead.
I just wanted to say it was a great blowout. I think it was a good momentum forward, especially when we're going to go play the Rays. We still got a big hole to dig out of. I think everybody would agree with that. Do you think Mark DeRosa could take Bonifacio's job?
No.
No?
No.
No way?
Nope. That's not what Mark DeRosa's here for. Mark DeRosa is here to be a backup, to be a bat against lefties every once in a while, to be that veteran glue presence. He's not here to play on a regular basis by any means.
Do you think Bonifacio will get out of his slump?
There's no reason he won't.
Yeah,
it's 73 at-bats, you know, as bad as it looks, now 74 at-bats that he's had a very, very rough time. But this is a guy with a career on base over 340.
Right.
There's no reason to believe that this is who he is now.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for having me on the show.
Appreciate the call. Thanks very much. 10-2. The Blue Jays beat the Seattle Mariners. A great game for Mark DeRosa. And a huge three-run homer, couple of doubles, and three runs scored in this rout. And all his hits, pretty important ones, but the two first double and the three-run homer coming with this game still very, very close. Eric in Toronto, you're up next, listening on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome to the Blue Jays talk.
Hey, Mike. Like many, I'm hoping this can be a turnaround game for the club. And we haven't won consecutive games all year.
They've done it once.
They have?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry.
That's all right.
And then next seven games are against division opponents. And these games are huge. But the way I see things, if we could get back to .500 when Reyes gets back, I think we have more than the skill required to make a run deep into September.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you at all. I said before the game today, if they can get back to .500 by the end of June, they'll be fine. And you assume if they get back to .500 that they're obviously playing pretty well to do that. But yeah, I mean, this is as desperate as it has felt the last little while with them losing 14 of 18 games going into today, this season is not a lost cause by any means. There are 130 games left. There's all kinds of time, but they have to start playing a lot better than they've been playing.
So I just want to talk about Bautista for a little bit. The guy's at his best when he's taking walks. And then 3 years ago, 2 years ago, he was right up there with Miguel Cabrera at the top of the league for taking base on balls. It's when he's really seeing the ball.
Go on.
And when he sees the ball, that's how he gets his average up. It's when he's hitting home runs. And so I think that's a really positive sign.
Yeah, he took a walk today.
Yeah, two today.
Well, one was intentional, though. So, you know, you're right. Jose Bautista is a guy who gets on base, and Jose Bautista is not someone who's going to hit .300. He's done it once in his career, but in the overall, he's about a .260 hitter, and you should be able to count on Bautista to hit about .260, to hit 35-plus home runs, and to have an on-base over .350, and he's got to draw those walks to get everything going, and today was definitely a good day for him. It was a good day for everybody. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate the call. It was it was a 10-2 win for the Blue Jays over the Seattle Mariners today, and they finish a 2-4 homestand. So the Jays have had three homestands this year, 2-4, 3-4, 2-4, and one hopes that they can build off this win. I don't buy momentum. I don't think now that there will be a surge and everything's going to be fine, but I do think that there are wins that you can build off. The Blue Jays have failed to do that many different times this season. Hopefully, this is one that they can build off. Let's go to Manhattan. Daniel, listening on sportsnet590.ca. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike. So I think the biggest difference today compared to most of the other games this year is just the approach most of the hitters took to their at-bats. even in some strange counts and everything, they let the pitches come to them. There was one at bat where Bautista hit it back up the middle on a pitch that he would normally either pop up or hit a weak grounder with, but he took what was given to him. And I saw that across the lineup from Kawasaki and all the guys. But that's what I thought was the biggest difference today.
I enjoyed that, too, and I hate to kind of be the dirt in the punch bowl, if you will, about that, but they did the exact same thing on Tuesday in their 9-7 win over the Red Sox. They were taking great at-bats. They had terrific approaches. They waited out John Lester. They let stuff come to them, and that was fantastic on Tuesday. And then they went out and they scored three runs in the next four games.
Right, but we agree that the characteristics of playing well have to do with those good at-bats. So I think if they definitely capture that and really work on that and visualize that and say that going forward, I think that'll be a big deal. And then just one quick question I had for you. Is Reyes with the team? I mean, I know he's hurt, but is he
No.
with the team physically?
He's not with the team right now. He pops in every once in a while. But I think until he starts to rehab, and he might be getting the boot, getting out of the boot shortly. I can't remember when they told. I think it was we were in New York. So last weekend, they said 2 weeks till he's out of the boot. So he'll be out of the boot end of next week. And then he may go down to Florida to rehab. So he's not going to be around. He was there last weekend because he lives in New York. And he'll be there probably next weekend or the weekend after next, unless he's already off on his rehab in Florida. But no, he's not around the team much.
Because there might be some value in having Mr. La Vista, you know, really, really helping things along when they're getting down in the dumps in the dugout.
Yeah, he's certainly a positive and an energetic presence. That's for sure. The most value, though, I think, is getting him back in the lineup as quickly as possible. And if he has to go down to Dunedin to do that, to rehab properly and to get in extended games and play minor league games and stuff like that, I think that's overall the best move they can make. Thank you, Daniel.
Last thing real quick.
Yeah, all right, real quick.
Yeah, the slump busting yesterday was absolutely hilarious. So keep it up.
Thank you. Appreciate that and appreciate the call. And I appreciate all the calls, and I don't want to rush through any. So we'll just let you know where to go to listen to the remainder of the program, because at the top of the hour, we are going to let the network go. We will stay on for another hour till 5 o'clock Eastern time on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. But you can also find us on sportsnet590.ca. You can find us on your Rogers radio app or on Rogers Digital Cable Channel 904. So stick with us there and enjoy another hour of the Blue Jays talk. A 10-2 win for Toronto over Seattle to snap a four-game losing streak and get to 11-21 on the season. It's the Honda Post Game Show on the Home Hardware Blue Jays Radio Network. Welcome back to Rogers Center. Blue Jays beat the Seattle Mariners 10-2 in a game in which everything goes right for the Blue Jays. They hit, they pitch, they pick up their pitcher after Brandon Morrow loses the plate in the fifth inning, walks four, but he'd had some breathing room. They turned a 3-0 Blue Jays lead into a 3-2 lead, and then in the bottom of the fifth, boom, the Jays climb all over Joe Saunders. Melky Cabrera hits his first home run as a Blue Jay. Mark DeRosa later in the inning with a three-run shot. And the Blue Jays cruise to a 10-2 win. Morrow, after that blow-up inning in the fifth, went out and retired 9 of the next 10. Became the first Blue Jay to complete 8 innings, Blue Jay starter. And the first Blue Jay starter even to throw a pitch in the 8th inning. He picks up his first win of the year, and the Jays caught some breaks. A couple of pop-ups lost in the sun by the Mariners. Two of them dropped, one of them caught, but caught as he fell, Dustin Ackley did, and that allowed Rajay Davis to score from third on a pop-up. Lots of breaks going the Blue Jays' way, and even when one didn't, when Edwin Encarnacion tripped over the pitcher's mound trying to catch a pop-up by Kendrys Morales in the eighth, the Blue Jays already had an 8-run lead, so it didn't matter. A great game. And we're going to continue the Blue Jays talk again on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, sportsnet590.ca. starting at the top of the hour. Right now, we will take a look at the scoreboard, and the New York Yankees trailing Oakland 5-4 in the bottom of the eighth. Josh Donaldson broke a 4-4 tie with a massive home run in the second deck at Yankee Stadium. Luke Montz has his first career home run in that game. Minnesota leading the Indians 4-1 in the bottom of the ninth, trying to snap the Tribe's six-game win streak. Kansas City 3, the White Sox 1, that's in the bottom of the fifth. Red Sox and John Lester lead Yu Darvish and the Rangers 3-1 in the top of the fourth. Homers for David Ortiz and David Ross as Boston trying to fight off a sweep. Orioles lead the Angels 1-0 in the bottom of the first on an RBI double by Adam Jones. Over in the National League, Roy Halladay gets lit up by the Miami Marlins. Marlins lead the Phillies 9-0 in the top of the fifth. Halladay gave up all nine of those runs, did not get out of the third. He gave up a three-run triple and a grand slam, both to Adany Echevarria, who has tied the Miami Marlins franchise record with 7 RBIs in one game, and he's still got 5 innings left to build if he gets that chance, though Doc is long gone. The Blue Jays off on the road now. 7-game trip through Tampa and Boston opens up against the Rays tomorrow night. We're on the air at 7 Eastern for a 7:10 first pitch. Mark Burley against Jeremy Hellickson. You've been listening to Home Hardware Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Home Hardware, homeowners helping homeowners with expert advice. This copyrighted broadcast is presented by authority of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership and may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form, and the accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without the express written consent of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership or the Blue Jays Radio Network. Keep those calls coming for Jerry Howard, Dirk Hayhurst, Tom Young, Dylan Brown, Derek Brandeo, and Joe Sicilia. I'm Mike Wilner. Good afternoon from Toronto.
Blue Jays trying to add to a 1-0 lead over the visiting Mariners. The ball slapped to right field. A base hit. Aaron Sebias scores. Held a third. DeRosa. Meisser back to first. The Blue Jays lead Seattle 2-0.
And they would add on and on. Another ground out by Munenori Kawasaki later in that second inning made it 3-0 Blue Jays. And after the Mariners got two back against Brandon Morrow, who just fell apart in the top of the fifth, walking four batters and giving up two runs despite only allowing one hit, an infield single, the Jays added four in the bottom of the fifth to pick up their pitcher, and it was a rout from then on. Morrow found his stride again, retired 9 of the final 10 he faced, becomes the first Blue Jays starter to even get an out in the eighth inning, completes 8, gets his first win. Jays take down the Mariners 10-2 in a rout. And now they're off on the road, 4 in T-Bay, 3 in Boston. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk, and take you all the way to 5 o'clock here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And then we'll have our Euro Soccer Show. That should be a lot of fun. Phone lines are open at 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, and long distance, 1-888-666-0590. John is in St. Catharines. John, welcome to the local portion of the program.
Thanks, Mike. Just continuing on a statement you made about 10 minutes ago about Batista. Mentioned his 260 average. Right now he's batting 213. Got to give it to him. It is climbing. But I don't think he's a third hitter. I think he definitely should be in the cleanup spot.
Why is that?
Not hitting for high enough average. Not a slap hitter.
You don't want a slap hitter batting third.
Well, not a slap, but I mean, I'm talking someone that's going to hit for average, hit all around all the fields.
Why? Why don't you just want your best on base guy batting third?
Okay, he's not our best on base guy.
He usually is. Not this year, he's not. But over
not
the course of his
not
career,
not for last
he's been.
Year. I mean, since last April and before his injury, he's just not a typical number three hitter in my book.
I don't know what to tell you, because I don't know what you've seen since last April. He was awful last April.
Yeah, I'm
as
talking,
well
yeah,
as this
2012.
April. Right. But, I mean, after that, he was pretty terrific.
Yeah, I know. He was coming on before the injury. I'll give him that. It seems he's coming on now. But I picture a number three hitter with a higher average, you know, hitting somewhere around 300. I think Melky should actually be hitting in the third slot.
Melky has to work to get his on base up to 300.
Who's that?
Melky.
Come on, we know that's going to come too. I mean, you're giving Bautista the benefit of the doubt. You got to give Melky the benefit of the doubt here.
I think there's a lot more doubt with Melky Cabrera than there is with Jose Bautista.
Why is that? He's a proven 300 hitter.
Is he?
Yeah.
Clean? That's a valid question.
Yeah, I'll give you that. True, it is. But
yeah, there's a lot of doubt about Melky Cabrera.
I still think his power numbers might drop off, and obviously they have.
He doesn't have any power numbers.
No.
I mean, even going well, he's not a 20 home run guy. Melky,
no.
I mean, if you're looking for what Melky Cabrera has been the last couple of years, I think is a perfect 2 or 5 hole hitter, to be honest with you. I want power out of my 3 hitter. I know that Keith Law, and I got to read it, I haven't read it yet, has put up an article about how he thinks the best hitter in the lineup should bat second as opposed to third. And I think that there's a lot of merit to that, because a second hole hitter, you're guaranteed at least not to start the game and have your first at bat with 2 out and nobody on, where you're not guaranteed that as the third hitter. But the conventional wisdom for the last little while has been hit your best hitter third, because he either extends the first inning or, you know, you set up your lineup, the first 2 guys get on base for him, and he can do some damage. And I don't think there's any question that Jose Bautista is the Blue Jays' best hitter.
I'm thinking, yeah, power overall. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just think he's better suited in the number 4. But
again, why?
Just because, I mean, see, he's got the power numbers, and I just look at Miguel Cabrera as a classic 3 hitter. I know I'm really pushing it there, but...
Yeah, well, Miguel Cabrera, I hate to tell you, is the best hitter in baseball.
Yes,
so absolutely, he is a classic 3 hitter.
Mm-hmm.
But he's the best hitter on the Tigers. Bautista's the best hitter on the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I mean, well, if Lurie starts hitting for a little more power and a little more average, I mean, he could fill the 3 slot.
You seem to be completely dismissing on base percentage here. Because Lurie and Cabrera are 2 guys who don't have great on-base percentages, even when they're hitting for high average.
No, I know. I hear you.
Yeah, and you need that up there in the top of the lineup. You need guys who are going to not get out.
Well, I just wish his batting average there. I'm going to ask you one more quick
question,
okay?
Don't get so hung up on batting average.
Pardon?
Don't get so hung up on batting average. It's far less important than on-base percentage.
Okay. I'm going to ask you one quick question, too.
Sure.
What do you think is going to happen when Reyes comes back with Kawasaki?
No idea. That's 2 months down the road still. No clue. Kawasaki could have been released by then. He could be hurt. He could stop hitting.
Yeah. Can he play second?
I'm sure he can play second.
Yeah.
And especially the way Asturias and Bonifacio have been playing second. I'm sure he'd be fine at second base. But you know what? Let's let the next 2 months happen. And then figure out what to do.
Yeah,
how about
I'd say
that?
Right now, I think he's deserved to stay. But
right, but that's right now.
Yeah.
Right? After he's been on the team for 2.5 weeks.
It's been longer than that, hasn't it?
Nope.
Oh, my Lord. Okay, well, listen, have yourself a good day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, it's been 3 weeks, actually. Yeah, he joined the team on April 14th in Kansas City. But I know, and that might be the question I get asked more than any other question on the Twitter is, what do you do with Kawasaki when Jose Reyes comes back? Let's let the next 2 months happen. Then we'll figure it out. A decision certainly does not have to be made now, nor can it be made now. 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. It's funny, we always get fewer callers after a win than after a loss. The people who call in after every loss to complain are mysteriously gone when the Blue Jays win. Dan in Toronto, welcome to the Blue Jays Talk.
Yes, good afternoon, Mike. It's nice to be part of the Jays Talk today.
Thanks for calling.
I have a Toronto-specific question. I also have a Seattle Mariners-specific question.
I don't know why
comment,
you would ask me a Seattle Mariners question, but okay, go ahead. Okay.
All right. In regards to Morrow, like today, I wouldn't say he was dominant, but I mean, he pitched very well.
He was dominant, except for one inning. He was thoroughly dominant.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Okay. But we've seen this before.
Yep.
We've seen him strike out 17 batters.
Yep.
And then we've seen him get yanked after 3 in a third inning.
Well, we've seen him get yanked in the first.
Well, yeah. I mean, okay. I was trying to be a little bit politer than that. So, you know, I just find that, you know, his MO, I guess, so to speak, over the course of his career has been that. One good outing, one bad outing, two bad outings.
It certainly hasn't.
You know,
it certainly hasn't. Look at last year.
It's plagued him since his days in Seattle.
Well, in Seattle, I think he really got jerked around in Seattle. And I think that unfortunately, what they did to him with moving him from the bullpen to the rotation, to the bullpen, to the minors, to the rotation in the minors, to the bullpen in the majors, all that crap that they did, they all but ruined Brandon Morrow. And you have to remember a couple of things about him. And the first of those things is that he's 28 years old, which is, not old at all for a starting pitcher. Still young, and a lot of guys don't really hit their stride until then. And then you have to remember that the breakthrough that he made last year, because you talk about, one good outing, one bad outing, two bad outings, three good outings. And that's just it's not true. I mean, and it hasn't really been true the last couple of years. In 2011, his first 10 starts were brutal.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point on, he had a fantastic year. Last year, he was hurt in the middle with the oblique thing, so he only made, I think, 17 starts, something like that. And in 12 of them, he gave up no runs or one run. So he was phenomenal, far more often than not, in his starts last year. So, if you want to give three good starts, one bad start, that's fine. But he's certainly not one bad, one good, two bad, three good, anything like that.
Okay, all right. Well, I'll be curious to see what his line looks like the next time he goes out. So, I noticed that Brandon Seager this weekend had a very good weekend.
Kyle Seager, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I noticed that at some point during the weekend, it looked like he was running against the wind, and I noticed that sometimes he liked to listen to some old-time rock and roll.
You're bringing Bob Seger jokes up, huh?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Mike.
I prefer the Veruca Salt references. You can't fight the Seger, but if you want, I don't pull out the Bob Seger stuff because he spells it with an A, and Bob doesn't. Emily is in Toronto. Emily, you're up next on the Blue Jays Talk.
Hi, yeah, I've been going for years to the Jays game with my dad, and all of a sudden there's been so many fans going to all these games, and now suddenly there's 22,000 people going on Sunday. I was wondering, what's it going to take for these fans to come back and whether they are ever going to come back?
They're going to have to start winning. I think that's it, plain and simple.
Just to start winning?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of buzz about this team in the off season, and there were a lot of people who came out to check them out the first couple of homestands, and they didn't win. And they went 2-4 in the first homestand, 3-4 in the second one, and they come back to town after this last road trip just in a terrible state. Can't remember what their record was when they got back, but they were 9-17 when they came home, and that doesn't really bring a lot of people out to the ballpark. And then they come home, and then they score 3 runs in 4 games, which brings even less people out today.
So you think they're ever going to come back? I mean, with like 50,000 people, almost all of the games, and now suddenly there's none. You think they're ever going to be able to come back? Or
I don't think we're ever going to get to 50,000 a game. Every game, like they had at the beginning when this ballpark opened in '89, and they had 4 million here a couple of years in a row. I don't think we're ever going to see that again. But I think that if the Blue Jays are winning, and winning regularly, and a playoff team, and more than in a race, then I think we'll be able to see 40 to 45 on weekends and 30,000 plus during the week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. And I hope it happens. And I understand why this homestand was not terrific for attendance. I completely understand that. When you've got a team that's struggling to the extent that this is, especially when you combine all the expectations on this team with the performance, I completely get why people wouldn't come. And in fact, they drew way more than I expected for this series against Seattle. Today was 22-9. That was the smallest crowd of the weekend. They had 35 in yesterday to see that 8-1 debacle. So you had over 80,000 in attendance for these three games. And I thought the way the Jays were going, it might have been closer to 50. So kudos to those of you who came out, especially those of you who came out today, because you got to see a great game and a 10-2 win for the Blue Jays over the Seattle Mariners. We are going to Blue Jays talk it up right up to the top of the hour. Keep them calls coming at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. I'll try to keep an eye on the Twitter as well, though it's difficult. At Wilderness590, you can hit me up there, but I only have one screen, so it's doesn't make it easy. But you can try to hit me up there. And again, phone lines are open because it's Sunday afternoon and because they won. So all the people who love to call and hate, don't call when the Blue Jays win. Does anybody want John Gibbons fired today? 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. John Gibbons gets 15 hits, goes 5-for-14 with runners in scoring position, and pitches into the eighth inning as the Blue Jays beat the Mariners. 10-2, the Blue Jays talk continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The line drive, base hit to right field, fielded by Morris. Here comes his Turris, he scores. Scampering to third base is Kawasaki. And the Blue Jays now lead Seattle 10-2 as Cabrera with his third straight hit.
Melky Cabrera with three hits in three innings. Sixth in the fifth, a homer. Singles in the sixth and seventh. He was one of three Blue Jays with a three-hit day and a 10-2 win over the Seattle Mariners. A win that we hope gets this team kick-started on their way back to 500. They are 11-21 right now, even with this 10-2 win. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk. 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell. Long distance, 1-888-666-0590. Tom is in Oakville. Welcome to the program, Tom.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for calling.
Well, I have to say, what a fantastic game by this team today. And there's two big things that stood out. Then I have I want to address one suggestion, and then I have a question.
Just go ahead, Tom.
First off, Brandon Morrow, what a start by him. He got into a little bit of trouble like the last two pitchers, Dickey and Romero the other day, but he finally worked through it. And Gibbons was smart enough to leave him in there. He got through it, pitched a gem of a game. That's the type of pitching, or those are the type of situations that's good, that, you know, this team is going to go through if they're going to win, you know, big games down the stretch. You agree?
Well, I think they need strong, strong starting pitching, that's for sure. And I was very impressed with the way Brandon Morrow righted himself after that brutal fifth inning, for sure.
Yeah, and that's something that the other pitchers just haven't been able to do this year.
Well, Dickey did it yesterday, though.
I'm sorry?
Dickey did it yesterday.
He still gave up seven runs, a lot of home runs. I just don't think it was a great inning great game by Dickey yesterday. Too many runs, home runs.
Yeah, but he'd already given up five by the time, you know, the bad inning. I'm saying that he came back from his bad inning and was okay. Not great, but okay.
Now, the second thing is, the other real good thing about today is that it wasn't Bautista and Encarnacion that carried this team today. Yes, they got on base a couple times. Bautista walked a few times, but it was the other guys who stepped up to the plate. Mark DeRosa stepped up. Kawasaki stepped up. And it was really great to see other players really carry the load. They didn't have to rely on those two.
Yeah, it's been a long time since the Blue Jays have had an up-and-down offensive day up and down the lineup like they did today. Now, they did have it in the first game of the homestand, but that was Edwin with a couple of home runs as well, and certainly not the contributions that they had today. Three hits each for Cabrera, DeRosa, and Asturias. Kawasaki had a couple as well. JP had two hits. Everybody hit today, and it's funny, Edwin was the only Blue Jay not to get a hit in this game. Well, Emilio Bonifacio 0-for-4, but with a couple of stolen bases as well.
Right. And then Kawasaki, I think the great thing about him, and a lot of people love this guy, is that, and a lot of people are commenting on Twitter what to do with him, because he's that little guy who could. You know, he's in the big leagues. I think he's like 32. He finally got in there last year. He's making the best he can with it this year. And for some reason, I get the impression he doesn't think he belongs there, but he's showing that he can play. I don't know if you agree or not.
For a second he doesn't think he belongs in the major leagues.
I just think that, like, he's seen him. I think there's a little doubt in him, but he's performing, and that's the beauty. And I think that's why a lot of people really are rallying behind this guy. And that's what I like about him. Every time he comes to play, to see what he's going to come up with, to see what he can do, and it's a beauty to see this guy in there.
He's a lot of fun to watch. I will say that. He's exciting, and he plays solid defense. But, you know, let's not get too carried away. He's hitting 240, and that's even after the two hits today. He's not walking much. He's doing a fine job overall as a nine-hole hitter. But I mean, all he is a replacement for
a very
good
player. Okay, and then my final question is, I guess this is not about today's game, is what happened to all the getaway games that the Jays used to play during the week? There doesn't seem to be anything down at the Rogers Center this month. I don't think there was one. I think there's one next month.
There's a 4:30 game on a Wednesday later this month against Tampa, and on there's a Tuesday 12:30 game on May 28th against the Braves. But those
is there a reason? It just seemed like every year there was a getaway game up until September, and then they would kind of disappear. But this season,
I don't think there've been a ton of afternoon weekday games. And by when you say getaway game, you mean a day game during the week.
A day game on a Thursday, right at the end of a series before a road trip or something like that. There used to be a lot more.
And there are only three of those this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to see those come back. But anyways, you guys are doing a great job, and thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
Okay,
appreciate
bye.
The call. The only thing I don't like, and a lot of people do this, is they think they know what players are thinking. I don't understand how people can think they know what a guy's thinking. I really don't get that. Maybe someday someone will explain it to me. Thomas is in Toronto. The rare call after a win from Thomas. Go ahead.
Mike, don't accuse people, because you know what? Some of your other broadcasters on this station also think they know what players are thinking too.
Well, they're just as incorrect too. No, that's not an opinion. You can't have an opinion about what someone is thinking.
Okay.
That's not an opinion.
Some of your broadcasters?
I don't have any broadcasters.
Well, some of your station's broadcasters say the same thing.
Okay, and they're just as wrong.
Okay. My point, my problem, great win today by the Blue Jays. Great win. I'm heavily invested in the Blue Jays in many different ways. Great win by them today. However, the other day you were challenging callers on why Gibbons should be fired.
Yes.
Now, my question to you is this. What stock do you put in a manager? I mean, to me, I think it's ridiculous some of the things you say about that.
Like what?
Where does John Madden play into things in your mind in terms of his success with the Tampa Bay Rays?
Joe Madden.
Where does he play into that?
I think it's quite overstated. Joe Madden's success with the Tampa Bay Rays. I don't, I don't think bringing a magician or a penguin or something like that into a clubhouse really does that much. What it comes down to, I mean, Madden does a great job of keeping things light, and he's a smart guy, and he says smart things, and
smart
he knows how to deal with individuals. But it's the
baseball
players
IQ
who have to perform. Pardon?
In terms of his baseball IQ and knowing how to play small ball,
he's a smart guy. Everyone knows how to play small ball. Your players still have to execute what you ask them to do, and that's what it comes down to.
Oh, well, he's been pretty darn lucky because he's been pretty successful in getting his players to do what he asked them to do. So that, to me, seems like he knows something, or he's been demonstrating something, or he's been lucky about something that perhaps a lot of other teams in his payroll bracket haven't been able to do. So I would definitely say that's a manager's influence on the team.
Okay, and that is your opinion, and it's a fine opinion. I disagree with it. I think that he's got players who can perform and do the things that he asks them to do. And, you know, whereas John Gibbons has had his players not perform at all for the most part over the first 32 games of this season. It still comes down. You can be as smart as you want and put the, you know, play matchups and bring in the right relievers and run your bullpen perfectly. What it comes down to is that the players that you bring into a game, the players that you ask to execute certain things in certain situations, still have to do that. And when the Blue Jays are hitting less than 200 with runners in scoring position, I don't see how that has anything to do with John Gibbons, A. And two, I can't imagine how it would be any different if Joe Maddon was running the show.
I don't see why the major leagues or even professional sports, they make a big deal out of certain coaches that are on the free agent market or certain managers that are on the free agent market. If really, I mean, why isn't there more player managers then in this situation? If this philosophy is correct, or if this philosophy is more widespread, I mean, wouldn't there be more player managers?
Why
aren't there?
What does one have to do with the other? Why are there no Bears running around in center field?
Well, player managers, Mike, you're saying you're putting little or almost borderline no stock in the manager. You're saying, okay, yeah, you seem like he's there mostly as a motivator.
No. That's what you're saying. I don't think a manager is a motivator. I think a manager has to be a tactician, and I think a manager has to, you know, have a presence in the clubhouse so the people know he's in charge, and you know, he can't walk all over him or anything like that.
Can
managers,
veteran players do the same thing?
Sorry?
Aren't there some veteran player on team, Mark DeRosa? Can he do that?
Maybe. I don't think having a player manager is an altogether horrible idea. I just don't understand what it has to do with the point that I'm making. I mean, a manager still has a lot of things to do during a game.
I don't think they're necessary. Because basically, I'm saying, if we're losing, why can't we fire Gibby if the manager is not necessarily that important?
Then why would you fire him?
Why would you keep him?
Because he's not doing anything wrong.
Then why'd you hire him?
Because he's a good manager. I appreciate the call. This is like arguing with a wall. I don't understand any of the things that you're trying to say. A manager can affect a game by the substitutions he makes, by the lineups he puts together, by the bullpen usage. John Gibbons is really good at all those things. The Blue Jays being 11-21 is not his fault. Therefore, I don't think he should be fired. Jay in Hamilton, you're up next.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm all right.
Good. First of all, I got to say, you're definitely winning that last argument, that's for sure.
I don't even know if it was an argument. I mean, both sides have to make sense for there to be an argument.
You know what? It's very true. So I got a bone to pick with kind of our off-season acquisitions. Obviously, we put together a great team, and we're looking for, you know, a top-name pitcher. So then we go and we shop and we get R.A. Dickey. Obviously,
right.
A proven pitcher, great pitcher. You proved that last year, hands down. But what my bone is here is that we take a knuckleballer. We get a knuckleballer, and we bring him into a dome atmosphere.
Uh-huh.
Now, everyone knows a dome, it obviously is going to block wind, and those knuckleballs, they need wind to dance. And if
no.
you take a look at his
no,
last
no, no.
his last pitching,
don't start with the everyone knows, because because every knuckleballer says they prefer to pitch indoors.
Okay, now what I'm saying is that can you tell that a knuckleball isn't more effective with a little bit of wind behind it? Any pretty much ball with movement.
It can be less effective, too, though, depending on which way the wind is blowing, which is why Dickey and Tim Wakefield before him have talked about how much they enjoy the environment of a dome where there's nothing that has an effect and the ball can just float.
When it comes to throwing strikes. Now, when you see...
Period.
Like yesterday... When his ball is not, it's dancing. But
the
it's
roof
not
was
dancing.
Open yesterday,
right? But the dome isn't really a windy atmosphere, open or closed, really. When you look at it,
no, that's not true at all. In fact, people say that the wind comes in off the lake and hits that kind of like the back when the dome is open, where the scoreboard is in center field, and then goes straight down and swirls around on the field.
Oh, because by the looks of it, it looks like he's throwing BP out there. It looks like he's throwing batting practice. I don't
Jay,
know.
You're not dead. I'm sorry. Your entire point is completely ineffective for two reasons. A, because there is wind in this place and air does move around. It doesn't. You don't need it to be gusty and blustery or anything for the knuckleball to have an effect. And, in fact, it's often worse the windier it is unless that wind is moving in the pitcher's face. But, no, knuckleballer pitchers like pitching in domes, and when the roof is open, the air definitely does move around in here. I appreciate the call. You're going to have to see if you can figure out another reason why R.A. Dickey got lit up yesterday. We're going to take more of your calls as we continue. Blue Jays beat the Mariners 10-2. It is the Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Now he hits a fly ball to left center. That's pretty deep. That's up, and that's going to get out of here. Off the facing of the 200 level in left center field, Melky Cabrera's got his first home run as a Blue Jay, and the Blue Jays' lead is doubled to 4-2. That led off the fifth inning after Brandon Morrow fell apart in the top of the fifth, walking four and giving up a couple of runs to cut a 3-0 lead to 3-2. But Morrow was perfect from that point on, save for a pop-up on which Edwin Encarnacion tripped over the pitcher's mound. And picks up his first win of the year. The Blue Jays win in a walk, 10-2 over the Seattle Mariners. And they are now 11-21. I'm Mike Wilner. This is the Blue Jays Talk. We'll hear from John Gibbons. First, take a couple more of your phone calls. James in Toronto. James, welcome to the program.
I just want to continue the conversation about the impact of a manager in baseball. I'm not ready to fire Gibbons, but I do think there's a rock that you guys left unturned. And I think maybe what the caller was having a hard time articulating is that if the manager doesn't have any impact, how could you rate them against each other? Why would you have a manager of the year? Why would you have managers in the Hall of Fame if they're all the same? If they don't have an impact, then there's a lot of people in the baseball establishment who are dead wrong. And I think maybe what you guys did, what you didn't talk about was the impact they have on the mental game. When it comes to strategy compared to, say, football, baseball strategy is paint by numbers, comparatively speaking. Compared to hockey, where a coach's job is to motivate a team and make them fight in the corner, dig deep, and put in the extra effort, baseball is not really an effort game either. I think baseball is a between-the-ears game, especially with hitters. And I think the approach they bring to the plate is what's been lacking this year. I was at the game yesterday, and obviously they were successful at the plate today, but the pitches they were taking and the pitches they were swinging at and the types of swings they were taking tells me that either that they're just not listening to the hitting coach and to the manager, or they're getting some bad advice in the approach. And I think that is the piece that wasn't really talked about, and that's where a manager can really have an impact on a team's performance.
You know what? I wonder about that. I think that's more coaching than managing, but it still comes down to players. And like I said to the caller, it still comes down to the players having to execute what the coaches tell them to do. I mean, the coaches can give them strategy, and a manager generally has, it's not, like you said, it's not like football. They're not, except that, sometimes in football, the best head coaches are the ones who delegate, who let their offensive coordinator call the play, let the defensive coordinator set the defense, and they worry about kind of the broader scope things. And that's what John Gibbons does. He delegates and he lets his coaches do the instruction and plot those strategies and get those things done. So
I have more issue with the hitting coach then, because I think he's
I still think it's up to the players to execute the plan. And because a guy comes up to the plate and swings at a bad pitch, or takes a pitch, gets himself into a hole, and then kind of goes outside of his plan, I don't think that stuff is on the coaching. I think that stuff is on the players.
Missing piece there is what's the plan that's been given them.
Right.
I looked to my local Fan 590 reporter to find out what plan is being given and what their philosophy is, what the hitting coach's philosophy is. And maybe you're right. Maybe they're just not executing or just not listening to it. But I'm not too sure what the plan is.
And I don't think it's not listening to them. And you can go back on sportsnet590.ca and find some interviews that your local Fan 590 reporter has done with the hitting coach and listen to them and hear what he has to say. It comes down to execution, period. Because I really don't think that, you know, many different coaches have different philosophies. They kind of say it differently, and sometimes that's what you need to have click in. But as far as the baseball establishment being wrong and all that stuff, I think that part of sports, part of the way sports are covered, and part of the way fans absorb isn't the right word. But not so much enjoy, but the way they see sports is, you know, they have to deify a manager, a coach. Somebody has to be running the ship and guiding things and putting that strong, firm hand and being this smart guy who can motivate players and who can get everything done. And I think that's part of sort of the myth-making and the hero-building of what sports is, and a lot of that stuff just isn't true.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right.
Take my call.
I appreciate the call. Let's go to Adam in Toronto. Adam, you're next.
Hi. I just wanted to say the last caller sort of stole some of my thunder. I tend to agree with the last caller, and part of that is that baseball management is essentially a middle management role. And a manager in any facet, whether it's a restaurant manager or a retail manager, sort of has the same responsibilities, where I think the biggest complaint that I have about John Gibbons, which he didn't do today, which is, I think, I'm commending him on it, is that you got to kind of let guys work their way out of their slumps, especially considering that this is a marathon. It's not a quick season. It's not football where there's 16 games. You have to sort of allow guys to, you know, define their roles and allow them to work their way out of it.
When has he not done that?
Well, for me, consistently shuffling the deck in terms of his lineup every day.
He shuffled it again today.
Well, I would like to see today's lineup be a little bit closer to sort of the norm. In terms
really?
Of, I want Roger at the top
Brett
of the lineup.
Brett Laurie, Colby Rasmus, and Adam Lind on the bench every day?
No, but no, that's not what I mean. What I mean is, this first of all was a day off for Laurie.
Yeah.
Second of all, I don't want to see Brett Laurie leading off. I want to see Roger Davis leading off. Because to me, if you look around baseball, how many guys have that kind of lightning speed that Rajai brings to the table?
Oh, not too many.
Not
but
too many.
Rajai has serious issues getting on base against right-handed pitchers. And that's why he's not leading off every day. Because, you know, you can't steal first, right?
He has an average to slightly below average on base for his career. He has a high batting
against
average.
Against right-handed pitchers?
In general, is
okay,
his overall
but,
numbers.
Yeah, but overall numbers can be split so that you can have more information on
right.
how guys fare, right?
I understand and, that, but I don't
Rajai
think...
Davis has been a very below-average hitter against right-handed pitching for his career.
Throughout his entire career.
His career numbers against right-handed pitching, he has a .258 batting average and a .299 on-base percentage.
Okay.
I don't want that at the top of my lineup.
I want that at the top of my lineup when it comes with 50 steals and when it comes with...
Wow.
The
well, you
for
and
the
I diverge
time.
Greatly there.
Well, the
that's a well below average on base percentage, and you want that guy getting more at-bats than anybody else
no,
in your lineup?
No, but there's an idea that getting consistent playing time gets someone into a rhythm where they're able to fight out of it. Look at Austin Jackson, for example. He had a high strikeout rate. And he's been parked at the top of the order for the Detroit Tigers for the last 2 years. And you've seen through that consistency, whether he's 0 for 4 or 4 for 4, he's getting the job the next day. And his strikeout rate has come substantially down over the last 2 years. It takes guys time.
He's a kid. Rajai Davis is 30.
Well, how old is Austin Jackson? 26?
Uh-huh.
He's been in the league for a couple of years.
That's
okay,
a
so
big difference.
So but Rajai's never had the opportunity
sure he has.
To park himself at the top of the order for 2-3 straight years. He's
yes,
never
he,
had that.
He has. He has. Just
and
not
when
here,
been,
but he has.
And right, and in Oakland, what did he do? 305 and 54 steals, 284
hit,
before he came here.
Didn't hit right-handers well.
Well, I'm...
Look, you,
the
best thing
crime.
You can do, I think, is take advantage of the strengths that your players have and put them in a position where they're best suited to succeed.
Exactly. And
Rajai is a... I love Rajai Davis, but he's not a good hitter against right-handed pitching. And I certainly think that you know, you're... To put a 300
out.
On base at the top of the lineup is just...
Against right-handers. Overall, he's about a .315 to .320, which is not great. It's slightly below average.
Right. That's actually bad. For a leadoff hitter, it's terrible.
It's not great, but
no,
you know
no,
what?
It's
he's
terrible.
Got a .279 average, though.
Yeah.
And when he is on base, I think that stolen
no,
bases...
No, good things happen for sure when he's on base.
Right.
No disputing that. The problem is he just doesn't get on base enough.
Wait a minute. Let me just say one more thing, because then I got to go. My point is that Emilio Bonifacio has been playing. He is a rather subpar defensive player.
Yep.
That's been the accusation against Raja as well. And he's in the lineup at second base because they say, we need his speed. Well, Emilio Bonifacio was a bench player in the Marlins last year. He had 274 at-bats. It's not like he played every day.
He did play every day, and he was hurt.
Emilio Bonifacio did not play every day in Miami.
Emilio Bonifacio was hurt 2 months into the season.
Well,
the point is
that if you're going to put up with his defense because you like his speed, I don't know why you wouldn't put up with Rajai's defense and have his speed at the top of the lineup.
But nobody's putting Bonifacio at the top of the order. There's the difference. That's a huge, huge difference. And
I don't want to see Lurie's power at the top of the order. I think it's a waste.
Brett Lurie hit like 8 home runs last year.
Right, and 11 in 2 months the year before.
Three
he has power upside.
Yeah, he has power upside, but we haven't seen it yet. And he's
not
the leader. What?
Brett Lurie, you could argue that even though he's a rather fast guy, he's not a particularly great base runner. That's sort of the Achilles heel of his skill set.
No, he is a great base runner. He's not particularly smart at deciding when to steal home, but other than that, he's been a fine base runner. But I do have to move on. I do have to get to other people. I get it, but I go back to that quote from Moneyball that says, looks awfully fast walking back to the dugout after striking out. If you don't get on base, and Rajay Davis does not get on base against right-handed pitching, then you don't want that guy at the top of the lineup. Where are we going now? Adam in Toronto? No. See, you got to be quicker for me. I get lost here. Stuart in Richmond Hill. Hello, Stuart.
Hi, Mike. I wanted to challenge you on your statement that Gibbons uses his bullpen, perfectly.
Sure. Well, nobody does anything perfectly.
No,
but he uses it really well.
Well, I think that the first game of this real slide, which was the first game in Baltimore, tie game, ninth inning, and he doesn't go to Jansen. And Bill James did a really good study a few years ago that by far the two most valuable times to use your closer are winning by a run and when the game is tied. And all other situations are far less important, especially when you're winning by 3 runs.
Yeah.
Which is really, really cheap save.
This
and
is true.
So he put in Loop, they lost, and arrested Jansen was sitting in the bullpen.
They did. They lost not because of Aaron Loop, but because of the error that Munenori Kawasaki made with 2 out that went into the game.
Base runners.
Yeah, Aaron Loop hit a guy and had an intentional walk, which isn't his fault. And the error that continued the game kept things going. Look, there are differing philosophies as far as whether or not to use your closer in the ninth inning in a tie game on the road. And honestly, I don't know when you start working backwards. And I think asking John Gibbons to kind of defy complete baseball convention is a little bit much to ask. But there's certainly an argument to be made that Casey Jansen is the guy that you go to tied in the ninth on the road. The other argument is that you want your closer in case to protect a lead late in the game, which actually worked very well for the Blue Jays in that other extra inning win in Baltimore when they were tied in the ninth inning and Darren Oliver pitched the ninth inning and Esmail Rogers pitched the 10th and Casey Jansen came out for the 11th and saved it after the Blue Jays pulled ahead by 1 run. So, they're more comfortable that way maybe than Jansen working the ninth in a tie game and having to rely on Esmail Rogers to nail down a 1-run win. I understand that you're saving a closer for a potentiality that may never arise, but I can see both sides of that one.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks, Mike.
All right. There you go. Why don't we hear from John Gibbons? Should we do that? John Gibbons talked after the game. Let's hear a little bit about what Gibby had to say about the Blue Jays' 10-2 win over Seattle.
John, it just seemed like a lot of ways it was exactly what you were looking for in terms of the offense picking up the pitching when Brandon ran into some trouble there in the fifth and, him throwing shutdown innings after you scratched out that first run. I mean, did it just seem like it was just all around what you were looking for?
Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty good recipe today for winning. Great pitching, and we made a lot of things happen offensively. We got a lot of hits. It was a good game. We've been waiting for that one. You know, you get a little breathing room. Like you said, I mean, it got tight there, you know, early. But we came back and, you know, scored some runs and padded our lead again. And then, you know, Brandon was just great today. I mean, there's no way around that. When you pitch like that, even if you don't score a lot of runs, you're usually going to win. So we tip our hat to him.
John, from both sides of the plate today, Melky really had a nice stroke. I know you've been waiting to see that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've said it over and over. You know, he's a good hitter. I mean, that's what he is. You know, we've had a lot of guys struggling. It's just a matter of time. You know, guys, they've proven they can hit, and they'll do it again. I can hear you if you just holler.
You can hear me in the back. We talked a lot yesterday about, you know, the sort of resilience that you guys needed in the face of struggles. How much do you think you guys just needed a win like this today?
Well, big. I mean, it's no question about that. And, I mean, we're desperate for that. We need something like that. It's not like we're just waiting to get on a roll. We needed a win. I mean, they were hard to come by. So, you know, hopefully that spurs something on. We'll see. You know, we go down to Tampa. Tampa's always been a tough spot for this team, you know, since I was here and even the last few years here. I mean, they play. I mean, they're great at home, and they pitch well. So, hopefully, we can say that's a place we need to go. We'll find out.
Sacrifice bunt by Cabrera in the first. You're up. What was it? 8-2 or 8-1 or something at the time. Bautista goes into second hard when Encarnacion hits the grounder to second. Kind of play that you need to see.
Yeah, I mean, he was bunting on his own. I think you guys know me. I mean, you bunt when you need it, but I mean, he was trying to get something going, get that guy to third base, you know, with Jose coming up. So, and yeah, you know, I haven't. It was something we need to see. You know, we've played hard. I mean, it's not like we've been going through the motions or anything like that. It might look like that at times, but you know, a lot of times when you don't get any offense going, it looks like you're stale. But you know, that hasn't been the case. But yeah, I mean, you got to do those things. That's part of winning baseball, and we did that today.
So there's John Gibbons, Melky Cabrera bunting on his own in the first inning to move Rajay Davis from second to third after his leadoff double, from whence he scored on the pop-up to second base by Jose Bautista that Dustin Ackley had a hard time pulling out of the sun. Blue Jays beat the Mariners 10-2, your final score. They're 11-21 as they hit the road for 7, starting in St. Petersburg tomorrow night against the Tampa Bay Rays. It will be Mark Burley against Jeremy Hellickson. We're on at 7 o'clock. Make sure you join us then. Thanks to Tom Young, Dylan Brown, Derek Brandeo, Joe Sicilia. See you tomorrow.